Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Now, 30 years ago, this Saturday, the Berlin Wall started to come down. It was the beginning of the end, not just for the East German state, but for a decades-old division in Europe maintained by thousands of nuclear missiles. The journalist Peter Miller was the only non-German correspondent based in East Berlin during the 1980s. Echoing Spike Milligan, the name of his book is 1989, The Berlin Wall, My Part in Its Downfall. Peter, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not too bad. No, even can we start with like your job as a correspondent in East Berlin? I assume that the routine assumption was that you were a spy.
It was indeed, yeah. I mean, the strange thing was that, I know why I'm Irish, I was born in the north, so because Reuters were the only, they were only able to have a bureau in East Germany because they were one of the four powers of the Berlin Agreement. So I applied for a British passport and got one, and that was what made me there. And they obviously, because then they thought, oh, well, you're obviously an MI6 spook or an MI5 spook of some sort. And they followed me everywhere. I mean, they gave up after a while, but when the war came down afterwards, I finally got my Stasi record. And there was a whole hilarious bit where they followed me and I was then married and living in, and they followed us for 10 days in a row. And I'm sitting there from 6 in the morning till 8 at night, which was ridiculous because I didn't get up until about 9:30 and I didn't go to bed until about midnight. But they followed us everywhere. They followed us all around the city, all around the corridor. It was quite sinister to read it afterwards. And when the wall came down, we finally found out, although we knew there'd been microphones in the flat, there had been 29 of them, including 5 in the bedroom.
My word! And do you know where these people were who were listening to you?
Yes, I do, yeah, because I found them out. There were, if, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a movie that goes about this and the lives of others.
Yes,
but
indeed.
There were two places. There was a flat right next to ours, and we were on the first floor. And the one next to us was locked, and no one ever went into it. I discovered afterwards that there was a spiral staircase went up from the bar downstairs, and the guy sat in there, and I got his name to Lieutenant Vernert, and he'd been taking down all the tips. And also there was somebody in the roof, who had they were recording everything.
My word, that's astonishing. So on the day, as you described it, that people started going from east into the west, it was almost like there was a mix-up and that they didn't realize, or the guards in the gate didn't realize that they hadn't actually given the order yet.
Absolutely. It was a total mix-up. It was because Günter Schabowski, who was a relatively junior Politburo official, he had just read the things that there'd been people fleeing to the west through the Czech Republic, or the Czechoslovakia, as it were, and then for Poland, including a couple I helped. But they'd been going for so long that the East German state realized, this can't go on. We're in chaos here. We're going to face a revolution. And so they made a decision to allow people to travel. But what they really intended was to make it something like, in Irish terms, like when during the Troubles, when there was the hard border with the north. And what they were, I mean, before, of course, you couldn't have gone through the border from East Germany to West Germany at all, unless you were a pensioner, because they wanted to get rid of you so you wouldn't have to pay your pension. But what, it's absolutely true. And then what they intended was to introduce a border where people could go through, but there would still be armed guards, and you'd have to get a visa and you'd have to get a passport, which most East Germans didn't have. And Schabowski didn't understand all of this, and he just said, well, it's been decisions we've taken to allow people to go to the West. And I said, well, when? And he said, well, it's from now. But what he meant was you would have to go to the state offices and get a passport, and then you'd get your passport stamped when you went to the West. But most East Germans didn't listen to the news from East Germany. They listened because there was a big transmitter station in West Berlin. And the West Berliner said, Schabowski has said people can go through to the West. And so nobody thought a word about it. Thousands of them headed down to the wall at one of the main crossing points they could get through. And they screamed at the borders, hey, it's been on the radio, it says I can go through. And the border guards rang up their headquarters, and they said, well, I haven't heard anything about this. And they said, what do? We shoot them? And he said, no, don't shoot them. So they let them through. And once the first couple of thousand had gone through, they'd gone through everywhere. At the time, I was driving back from Rostock on the north coast, and I didn't know what was going on because nobody had any idea of this. And when I got to the point where everybody was going through, they wouldn't let me through because I didn't have an East German identity. So I had to go down to Checkpoint Charlie. And they're the guys who I'd known for years, you know, the evil bodyguards. But I'd known them long enough, and they said, well, you can't take that car through there because they'll block the way to you. We'll look after your car for you. So they looked after my Merc, and I walked through, and through Checkpoint Charlie, only to have West Germans throw a can of beer into my hand and say, welcome to freedom. It was very strange.
And the beer, so on that, on those first few days, when East Germans went into West Germany, what kind of things did they do?
Oh, well, I can tell you all about that too, because having just got through, I thought, well, this is no good. I can come through here any time. I've got to meet some East Germans coming through. So I stood there and waited, and I saw three girls of about 19 come through, and obviously they said, hey, what are you all doing? And they said, well, we've been finishing work in the Hotel Russia, the Hotel Russia in East. We need to go to the Kudamm, and we don't know how to get there. I said, well, I've got a taxi here. Come on, jump in. And we took them there, and they, you know, everything had gone mad. There were cars going everywhere. There were people setting off fireworks. There were people handing out free newspapers that had just been turned out. And the first thing they did was borrow some West German money from me so they could phone their mum in the East. And their mum was horrified. She said, you've got to come back now. You've got to come back. You can't be staying over there. Mm. And they laughed, and then they went off. And then as it happened, on that same corner, I found the two East German friends of mine who I'd helped get out via Poland a month beforehand, and their brother who'd just come over that night from the bar we all drank in. And basically all we did that night, because it was late in the evening already, all we did was go into the bars, and if you were said you were from the East, everybody gave you free beer. And I staggered back into East Berlin, because that's where my hotel was, at about 6 in the morning, thinking, this isn't going to last, you know. I'm going to wake up in the morning and it's all going to be closed again. But it was too late.
Yeah, because I was wondering about that, because I would imagine East German currency would have been pretty worthless in West Germany.
Yeah, it was completely worthless in the West. Nobody would take it. And that was one of the big things that they did to secure unification, which is after the wall came down, and then there was a vote in East Germany, and they said they wanted to join the West. Then their money was completely... There had been an official exchange rate of about 4-1, but the unofficial exchange rate was more like 10-1. And so everything in East Germany, all the money was completely worthless. And the West Germans did an extraordinary thing. They gave them everybody, depending on what age you were, between 1,000 and 10,000 West German marks for nothing. And then they exchanged the rest of it at the 4-1 rate. But it cost West Germany a lot of money. But they, as famously, I often wonder, could be said in Ireland that they did say that, it is, we can refuse, they can refuse to join us, but we cannot refuse to let them, no matter what it costs.
Yeah. So why was it? I mean, I suppose it was difficult to turn back the clock, but it was almost like the East German security forces and the government in East Germany just gave up.
Yeah, really, they did. I mean, Erich Honecker had asked Gorbachev, because I'd been at the marches down in Leipzig in the south, where people, thousands and thousands of people marched around, and we were terrified because there was a Soviet army base only about 10 kilometers away outside the city. And we knew that Honecker had been asking Gorbachev to send in the troops, as they had done in Prague and in Budapest and in decades in the past. And Gorbachev said, no, it's time to sort this out. Mm. And once that happened, everyone realized, I mean, Honecker was forced out, and his successor, Egon Krenz, didn't really know what he was doing. And there was, frankly, it was a people's movement, a people's vote, if you like, in current terms. But from the post it said, and once they said, we're going to let people travel, and the people headed for the border that night, there was simply no way of turning it back without having a Tiananmen Square-style massacre, which you have to remember was only 6 months earlier that year.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of eerie now, because you can go to Berlin and you can see what's left of Checkpoint Charlie, for instance, and it's a tourist attraction. To you, is that a bit slightly macabre, because people did die before that point trying to get across there?
They did indeed. And actually, the uncle of a good friend of mine had died only 2 weeks after the war went up, because he was living... Because you have to remember, it was a bit like turning a big... Because it was actually West Berlin that was inside the wall, as it were. East Berlin, you live in East Berlin, you could travel out to the rest of East Germany wherever you liked. And he lived on the southern outskirts of Berlin, as it had been. But he always drank in a bar. It was only 200 metres down the road. And then all of a sudden, the wall came between him and his bar. And about 3 weeks after the wall went up, that he and a couple of his mates said, fuck with this, we're going to go down and go and drink in the other old bar. And they went down and they crawled, three of them crawled under the wire, and he didn't quite make it and he was shot. That was pretty grim.
Yeah, Peter, thanks a million for talking with us today. That's Peter Miller there, and you can hear more from Peter Miller and his experiences in a new South documentary that's going to be aired this weekend called Behind the Wall. That's on Saturday the 9th of November at 9 p.m. To mark the anniversary, obviously. And it tells the story of four men and women with Irish connections who lived in East Berlin, and it's produced by our own Simon Tierney.